This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Community watch groups were once such simple operations. It used to be that responsible neighbors would organize to keep an eye out and alert local police if they witnessed a burglary or spotted a vandal defacing property. Since September the 11th, 2001, many neighborhood groups have broadened their role to include national security issues on their own streets. While Congress scuttled President Bush's controversial TIPS program that wanted to enlist private citizens who visit our homes, like cable installers, programs that encourage reports on suspicious activities have sprouted up around the country. In a program called Highway Watch, the Department of Homeland Security asked truckers to be the government's eyes and ears on the open road. Toll booths attendants may give your car the once-over as they hand you your change. Proponents say these are prudent precautions in this day and age. Civil liberties groups worry that these programs violate our privacy and encourage racial profiling. This hour, we'll talk about the expanding role of citizen watches, how these groups work and what we can expect from them, and whether they do intrude on our private lives. Later in the program, after repeated warnings about the shenanigans of shock jocks in Quebec, the Canadian government has yanked the license of a controversial radio station, CHOI-FM. There's a protest rally today on Parliament Hill in Ottawa. But first, private eyes, public neighborhoods. Should terrorism be part of the citizen watch? If there's a citizen watch in your neighborhood, if you're a member, give us a call. And if any truckers listening in are part of the highway watch, we'd like to hear from you as well. Is it appropriate to put terrorism on the list of things to keep an eye out for? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Jack Riley, co-director for Terrorism Risk Management Policy at the RAND Corporation. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Neil.
Let's start first with the traditional neighborhood watch groups. What exactly do they do? I mean, is it simple, keep an eye out for the neighborhood?
That's the basic principle. The idea is that the people who live and to a lesser extent, work in the neighborhood can help be the eyes and ears and help identify and prevent problems before they get established in the neighborhood.
And these are generally passive things, just to keep an eye out.
Right. Look for suspicious things, somebody perhaps moving articles out of a house that you don't think lives there, a car that is parked and in a place that it shouldn't be, or for long periods of time, and maybe, you know, the person is engaging in surveillance of the building, a variety of different things like that.
Do they work?
To my knowledge, they have never been formally evaluated. There have been evaluations of programs intended to rid neighborhoods of nuisance crimes like graffiti, vandalism, things like that, and many of those programs that focus on the so-called quality of life crimes have been proven effective, but the actual contribution that citizen watch or neighborhood watches make to having an reducing crime is not clear to me.
There are also, as we mentioned, these passive citizen watches. There are in some neighborhoods more active citizen type patrols, a more active thing where people don orange hats and flashlights and take back the night.
Well, I make a distinction between engaging the citizenry or the population in helping monitor our public spaces versus our private spaces, and I think citizen involvement in monitoring the public spaces like train stations, airports, and other places where you can imagine an attack occurring is all very beneficial. We want people to be on the alert for unattended packages if they're in an airport or on a train. We want people to be on the alert for suspicious behavior where an attack in public could cause a substantial loss of life and so forth. There is a role that citizen groups can play in our private neighborhoods or in our private lives as opposed to in public spaces, and that is in helping make sure that we're all prepared in the event that something does occur. Mm-hmm. So using neighborhood organizations to help make sure that people have emergency kits, that they have communication plans, that they've done their best to prepare not only for a potential terrorist attack but a natural disaster also makes sense. I think where the issue gets a little bit bit more complicated is when you're talking about these neighborhood groups in the context of keeping an eye out for terrorist behavior.
Well, this weekend, Democratic presidential nominee John Kerry told reporters he thought citizens groups should play an active role on the war on terror. Presumably, he meant exactly that sort of thing.
I don't know. I didn't see the statement. But as I said, certainly there is this role for neighborhood groups to play in terms of helping us improve our preparedness. That's a concept that's been around for a long time, and groups like the American Red Cross and many others have helped promote and build that kind of capacity. And there is this need for improved public perceptiveness and watchfulness in our public spaces, particularly as mm-hmm. we're in times like this where we're in a higher state of alert and where there may be more than the usual list of things to keep an eye out for.
We want to hear from all of our listeners as well. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN at NPR.org, particularly if you're a member of a Citizens Watch group or involved in these activities. Let's take a call now from Carol. Carol's on the line with us from, is this right? You're with the Oklahoma Highway Watch, Carol?
Yes.
And could tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I was impressed by the way they did the recruitment because I was, they made an announcement a few years ago when I was at the Oklahoma Tow Driving Championships, and to be in the Oklahoma Tow Driving Championships, you have to meet certain criteria through your company and through the state and federal laws, which to me was I thought was a good idea, because then the people who receive the calls from the members know that they're not just getting a bogus call.
So you're a truck driver, obviously.
Yes.
And are you joining us from the road?
Yes.
Where are you?
I'm headed toward Kansas.
And are you, did you get any training? What did they tell you to keep an eye out for?
Yes, actually, the company I work for is a major company, and we already have a lot of in-house education on several things as a terrorist watch, things like that. But the actual training was at the Oklahoma State Troopers offices, and they basically went over a lot of things that our company already teaches us.
Give us a for instance.
Not to leave your trucks idling, doors unlocked, check your equipment before you take off from every trip, and basically help us to not facilitate something that could be watched by people who might have bad things in mind. And
all that,
the truck to facilitate it.
All that seems sensible. At the same time, did they warn you to keep out for suspicious activity on the road?
Oh, definitely. And when there are calls put out through this Highway Watch program, the members get a call on their cell phone, and they describe the truck model, make, company name. Maybe one was stolen. Like at one time, there was a fuel tanker that was stolen, and they gave the information of where the direction of the vehicle might be headed toward and what time it was stolen, and really gives everybody a heads up to be watching for that vehicle.
Okay. Carol, thanks very much.
Sure.
Appreciate the phone call.
Have a good day.
You too. Jack Riley, that seems like, as outlined, a sensible program.
Well, and again, I think that's the kind of thing that involves greater attention to what I would call our public spaces. It's engaging professionals who are in a prescribed line of work. They have probably a very careful list of things that security risks and so forth that they are keeping an eye out for, and more importantly, they are helping increase our eyes and ears in our public spaces rather than private spaces. So I think it's an eminently sensible program.
Let's talk now with Dan, who joins us from Minneapolis.
Hi, how's it going?
Very well.
I just wanted to call in and comment that the average citizenry is not trained to identify a possible terrorist or what might be the signs of someone who's planning a terrorist attack. And we can't we can't let people just jump to their own conclusions about what may or may not be a terrorist activity.
Jack Riley, that's another certainly sensible concern.
Right, and that's what I think the major risk in terms of involving our citizenry in this more what I would call privately focused or neighborhood focused type activity. The caller is right. We're not trained, the average American citizen, to have any real sense of what the risks are, what we should be looking for. And there's the uncomfortable possibility that particularly in times like this, when we're at a heightened state of alert in certain parts of the country, that behavior and the consequences of us not being trained for those kinds of activities could become more difficult to manage.
Dan, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Here's an email we have from Tony in Redwood City, California. Many, many places like to think themselves important enough to have a terrorist attack. I, for one, do not believe that any terrorists will come to Redwood City, south of San Francisco, and blow up my favorite 7-Eleven. Is there any data at all, Jack Riley, on whether Citizens Group can help curb terrorism?
Again, to my knowledge, these kinds of things have never been evaluated. Programs like package awareness programs in the United Kingdom, in Israel, and other places that have suffered different kinds of terrorism have proven effective. There are numerous incidents on the tube system in London and many attacks in Israel that have been curtailed or prevented by having an alert citizenry.
All right. Let's talk now with Laura, and Laura's on the line from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi. How you doing, Neil? I listen to your show all the time.
Well, thank you.
A Homeland Security paid a visit to where my parents are on a river west of Cleveland and left. They came down in a government vehicle and wanted us to report any strange activity on the river, which is just mostly fishing and pleasure boating. But I think our Great Lakes are a vulnerable area. And but this also happened a week before George Bush came to Cleveland. So we wondered if it was Homeland Security worried about terrorism or...
Well, Laura, I'm afraid we're going to have to bail out on your phone. And Jack Riley, it might have been, as she was about to say, either Homeland Security or perhaps the Secret Service, just worried about security for the president's visit. But again, the rivers, ports identified as potential targets, many people are worried about them. Are those the kind of public spaces where some sort of watch program do you think might be useful?
Yes, those are the kinds of public spaces where a watch program could be helpful, but I think the kind of people to engage are the people who work in those environments or who commute through them on a regular basis. For example, with respect to the issue of ports and port security, it's not clear to me that the average resident in and around a port area is going to know what is suspicious behavior. In contrast, somebody who works in the port facility might be able to know whether the cargo was unloaded according to proper procedures, whether there was something wrong with the paperwork. There are lots of ways that we can increase our awareness and our sensitivity to security issues, but they typically are in these public space areas rather than these private space areas.
Well, later in the program, we'll be talking with the program coordinator for America's Waterway Watch to find out about how that program works. But in the meantime, Jack Riley, we wanted to thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Jack Riley is co-director of the Center for Terrorism Risk Management Policy at the RAND Corporation. He joined us by phone from his office in Santa Monica, California. We're talking about citizens and their role in reporting criminal and potential terrorist activity. We're also taking your calls, 800-989-8255, email totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the neighborhood watch groups and their role in an age of terrorism. We want to hear about your neighborhood watch group's activities. Has your local citizens patrol changed since 9/11? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. The National Sheriff's Association program USA on Watch provides training and support for neighborhood watch groups across the country. And joining us now here in Studio 3A is Eric Schultz, Project Director for USA on Watch. And it's good to have you on Talk in the Nation.
Thank you, Neil. It's better be good to be here.
According to your program, the number of registered neighborhood watch groups is on the rise. Why is that, would you say?
Well, obviously 9/11 has played a big factor in the increase or expansion of the Neighborhood Watch program. Citizens everywhere, Neil, are feeling more and more that they can do something or that they want to do something and play a role in Homeland Security. Neighborhood Watch is how they do that, how they get involved at the local level. So, we have seen a drastic increase in the number of watch groups across the country.
How do you keep track of them, and what's the number?
Well, our website, USA on Watch, is www.usaonwatch.org, is a website that we set up in January 2002, shortly after 9/11, to help us track the number of active watch groups that are across the country, as well as to help disseminate information about the program. And if you go to usaonwatch.org, you can register your neighborhood watch program with us, your neighborhood watch group with us.
Mm-hmm. And the number you have is?
We have just over 10,000 watch groups registered with us at this point, Neil.
Okay. Now, what kind of assistance do you provide to them? Is it training?
Training is more aptly done by the local law enforcement agency, the sheriff, or the police department. We provide materials, neighborhood watch manuals, crime prevention information, and so on. But that's not to say that we wouldn't, meet with citizen organizations or law enforcement agencies to help them develop their program.
You also provide groups with counterterrorism information and training?
Very shortly. We're working in concert with the U.S. Department of Justice and the Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency to develop a terrorism awareness and prevention program geared specifically for citizens.
What would that involve?
Well, it basically teaches them the ABCs of what terrorism is all about, how terrorists operate. And our first goal is really to get citizens past their prejudices and to recognize the fact that it's not who, but what we're looking for. It's not necessarily suspicious individuals or what have you, but it's suspicious activity. And that's really our first goal with this program, is to get people past the mindset that, we're looking for a specific individual or whatnot.
You're talking about profiling.
Sure.
Yeah. Here's an email we got from Jonathan Sanders in Muncie, Indiana. I'm a junior at Ball State University. I spent a semester researching this topic for a research course, and I became concerned that anything that simply asked people to look for certain characteristics that could lead to terrorism. My question is, what qualifies the general public to keep an eye out for things like this, and how do you keep racism out of it?
Yeah, again, we're not looking for characteristics. The goal is to look for suspicious activity. And citizens who live and work in their communities every day know when they see something that's out of place or unusual, or when someone or something isn't quite right.
Sometimes when they know something's going on, it's because the something unusual is somebody they're uncomfortable being around, and this can mm-hmm. lead to uncomfortable circumstances, sometimes tragedy.
Most definitely. And the key is to encourage citizens, when they see something that makes them feel not quite right, is to get them or encourage them to report it to law enforcement. Sometimes people are too quick to dismiss something they know is strange or is out of place as being something that isn't a threat, and it might very well be. So that too is an obstacle that we're trying to get past with Neighborhood Watch and with this program, is to get more citizens to report that suspicious activity when they do see it and know where to report it.
Well, let's get another caller on the line. This is Watha, who joins us from Minnetonka, Minnesota.
I was just about to give a certain say, idea for whoever is the guest on your program. What we need is, I am from an Arab background, and I'm Muslim, and I've been involved in a lot of interfaith and a lot of these security things back in California when I lived there. My opinion is we should involve those, let's say, Muslim and Arabic or, let's say, mosques in these programs and make them a resource for the Americans in order for them to come and show, I mean, find out what is it that's normal, what is it that's not normal, and they show them their concern, and they might actually have a program that involves both of them in order for them to have more ideas of what to look for, what kind of behavior that is normal, what kind of behavior is not normal. Mm-hmm. Because of the cultural differences, you might actually gain more insight on what to look for, not who to look for, because you are, let's say, trying to profile somebody.
Well, Eric Schultz, would you suggest, in fact, that groups reach out to the local Muslim community, perhaps to the mosque, and get some outreach like that?
Most definitely, Neil. I think the strength of Neighborhood Watch comes from its diversity and the fact that it's a citizen-based and citizen organization. The more of your community, the more individuals from your community you have involved, the stronger your program will be, the more sectors of your community, whether it be the schools or the churches or the mosques that you have involved, the more partnerships that you have in your Neighborhood Watch program, the stronger you'll be. And like she had said, the key, of course, is to understand that it's not, you know, it's not those, Muslims and that.
Okay.
That those that we're looking for.
Wafa, thank you very much for the phone call.
You're welcome.
And for the suggestion. Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Dave. Dave's calling from Kansas City.
Yes. How are you this afternoon? You've got a great show.
Thank you.
I'll make it brief because I know you have other callers. I live here in Kansas City, Missouri, and, of course, we have the Plaza here, which is United States' first shopping center.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's a real upper-scale four- or five-block area. And I was riding my motorcycle through there the other night and observed three obvious Middle Eastern people. One of them was carrying a digital camera, but he was carrying it in such a way as to not be obvious with it. And they weren't chatting and like you would, after dinner while you're walking along. They were all three obviously looking at the different buildings, and they seemed pretty interested in one of our popular outdoor cafes. So I followed them back to their cars and got the license number, and I didn't call the FBI. I called the Kansas City Bomb Squad, and they seemed awfully interested in these people. And according to your guest, that would be racial profiling. And I just want to see what your guest has to say, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for the call, Dave.
You're welcome.
Eric Schultz? Well,
I would disagree. I think if you observe an individual who is engaging in an activity that is suspicious or doesn't seem quite right, taking pictures of buildings or our local infrastructure where, would seem out of place, that is activity which is suspicious or, worthy of contacting a law enforcement agency. The fact that those individuals may have been Muslim or Middle Eastern in appearance doesn't make it racial profiling. I don't think if you're basing your suspicion on activity.
You would have to think, just as 99% chance at least, that those people are tourists, maybe entrepreneurs thinking about opening an outside cafe of their own.
That's right. It's a very real possibility. But the fact that, he was thorough enough to get and collect information such as their license plate is excellent. That's what we're asking citizens to do, is to be vigilant and to report what they see to the law enforcement agencies, and then they can decide whether or not it's something worthy of following up on, or if it was just tourists.
Eric Schultz, thanks very much for being with us today. We thank
you
for your time.
Thank
Eric Schultz is Project Director for the National Sheriff's Association Program USA on Watch, and he was with us here in Studio 3A. The American Civil Liberties Union recently published a report that raises concerns about the citizen role in tracking terrorists. Barry Steinhardt is director of the ACLU's Technology and Liberty Program, which produced this report, and he joined us now by phone from his home in Westport, Connecticut. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
You've raised concern with what you call the government's outsourcing of surveillance to private citizens. What, as you see it, are the costs of getting civilians, citizens, involved in counterterrorism awareness?
Well, first of all, let's be clear about this. Our report is not simply about neighborhood watch programs. It's about the whole panoply of efforts by the, particularly the federal government, to employ the private sector to assist in surveillance, often to compel it to provide it with private data. That ranges from some of these citizens watch programs to much more sophisticated programs like Matrix or the Total Information Awareness Program, which really rely on huge collections of private data.
Data mining, as it's called.
Data mining. It's a whole range of things. Now, you know, we're not opposed to citizens watch groups. We're not opposed to neighborhood watch groups. We are concerned about some of these programs that are now coming into existence that purport to train people to look for terrorists. It's very different to ask an individual to patrol their neighborhood, watch their neighborhood to look for signs of crime, break into a house, for example, act of vandalism, as opposed to using vague criteria to decide who's a terrorist. I must say, I just heard the caller.
I was just about to ask you to respond to that, yeah.
Yeah, well, that scared me, I must say. I mean, it's obvious that what drew the attention of that individual was the fact that these men were Muslim or Arab in appearance. He seemed to think that they didn't belong in that neighborhood and took their acts to be suspicious. But, you know, that isn't simply his impression of what's an appropriate thing to do, what's an appropriate thing to report to the police. The federal government is encouraging this kind of behavior. For example, there's something called the Waterway Watch Program, which is run by the U.S. Coast Guard, that asks that boaters report anyone who, quote, any suspicious person photographing or sketching waterfront installations. I got to tell you, that describes, now unfortunately gone, that described my grandmother, who learned to paint in her 70s, who used to go down to the local waterfront to paint. Or anyone who uses boating lingo or seems too eager to use all of the lingo. I got to tell you, that described me after my aborted attempt to learn how to sail. I was quite eager to show that I had learned lingo, even though I hadn't learned how to sail. We don't want people reporting to the Coast Guard or the police this sort of innocuous behavior. Do we really want to turn our citizenry into spies? Spying on neighbor, that's a very scary proposition.
This is Barry Steinhardt, the director of the Technology and Liberty Program at the American Civil Liberties Union. We're talking about citizen watches, burglaries and vandalism and drug dealers, but turning more and more towards terrorism as well. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another listener on the line. This is Jack, who joins us from Mound, Minnesota.
Ah, you're getting a lot of Mound, or rather Minnesota folks, aren't you?
Yes, we're getting a lot of calls from Minnesota today.
I guess my issue with this whole conversation is it's more about why it doesn't work. If we're going to leave the issue of racial profiling to the professionals, I don't think they've done such a good job, the police. And so we're now going to discount the entire population, as intelligent as they are, that they can't play by the rules. They can't watch behavior. The entire population isn't about bias. I think most people have a good understanding of the difference between behavior and racial profiling. Had people decided, you know, we're not going to talk about or what we might have seen for 9/11, the things leading up, behaviors they might have seen, we're not going to talk to anybody about those because that might be perceived as racial profiling. What could have happened had they spoke up? That's my real issue here is you're talking about why it won't work, and it's like 30 kids in a classroom. 29 are putting their heads down doing well, but Bobby, for whatever reason, I don't know his home life, He wants attention. Who gets attention? Little Bobby. And that's what we have here. For all the reasons this program should work, it's, well, this one over here is why it won't.
Barry Steinhardt, let's get a response from Barry Steinhardt.
Well, I think demonstrably it's not going to work. It doesn't work to tell people to go out and report anyone in their neighborhood or down by their waterfront who looks, quote, who looks suspicious to them, looks out of place to them. That's very different from telling someone to call the police when they see something that's obviously criminal or obviously threatening. In the materials that I just described to you, there was, for example, the instruction that you should call the police, call the authorities when you see dangerous cargo or loads that appear to be explosives, chemical containers or weapons being loaded onto a boat. Obviously, you should do that. We should object to that. You see a gun, you see an explosive being put into a Ryder truck or a boat, you should call the police if it appears to be someone who's unauthorized to do that. But it's very different from saying that someone who happens to be Arab or Muslim who's walking down the street with a camera looks suspicious to you because you're not quite sure what it is they're doing in that neighborhood. What right do they have to be in that neighborhood? That's what I fear is going on here. September 11th wasn't caused because ordinary Americans didn't report things that appeared to be suspicious to them. We now know from great unfortunate detail from the 9/11 Commission, that there was actually a good deal of information that our officials had about the September 11th terrorists. They were just incapable of communicating one with another. Those are the sorts of problems that we ought to be fixing, not turning all of our citizenry into spies.
I don't perceive it as spies. Isn't this the same as a neighborhood watch program if indeed we're talking about normal crime?
It's very, very different to have a neighborhood watch program where we instruct people to go out and look for evidence of crime, a break-in into a home, a broken window, whatever it is. But clear evidence of crime is very different than making judgments about people based on vague criteria about who looks suspicious, who looks out of place. That's not what neighborhood watch programs do. They don't decide. Good ones don't decide who looks to be unusual. They decide who's committing some crime, or they look for evidence of crime. They don't look for evidence of suspicion, evidence of non-normalcy.
Well, and this isn't looking for the evidence of potential criminal behavior or terrorist behavior.
Well, the problem is that these criteria, anything is evidence of potential criminal behavior or terrorist activity. Simply by saying that someone appears to you to be suspicious, not based on anything other than your instinct, and unfortunately, in too many cases, your bias, is not looking for evidence of criminality or evidence of potential criminality. It's asking people to act on their biases. That's not what we ought to be doing in this society.
Jack,
there are other proposals out there that make a lot of sense. I mean, Senator Kerry, for example, proposed that we ought to train people to be able to assist the authorities.
I'm afraid we're going to have to cut it off there because we're running out of time. Jack, thanks for the phone call. And Barry Steinhardt of the ACLU, thank you very much. You can see their report on their website. More after a break. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. And today we're talking about citizen watch groups and their changing role. Since September the 11th, 2001, the government has been searching for new ways to get citizens involved in the war on terror, principally about awareness. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Chief Petty Officer Penny Collins, Program Coordinator for America's Waterway Watch, an effort funded by the Department of Defense. The idea is to enlist private citizens to report suspicious activity occurring around, as you might imagine from the name, the nation's ports and rivers and waterways. Chief Petty Officer Collins, very nice of you to be with us today.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here today to talk about the America's Waterway Watch program. It is a maritime neighborhood watch program which was conceived by the United States Coast Guard in conjunction with the Department of Homeland Security in 2003. It primarily started after the events of 9/11, which were very tragic to all of us here in the country. And some of our commands throughout the United States started local programs for outreach purposes to the community, for people that are in or out on the waterways, for them to report anything that would look like suspicious activity. We do have materials that we are developing right now, which gives a list, a generic list of suspicious activities that people can review and look at in case they see something while they're out in the waterways. We encourage people to report suspicious activity. If it's an emergency, to call their local law enforcement agencies by calling 911. But if it's not an emergency and they believe that it's something unusual, then they can call the National Response Center. The National Response Center is located at U.S. Coast Guard headquarters, but it is funded by different government agencies. The National Response Center, when it was stood up, also took care of oil spills, search and rescue, and now suspicious activities for terrorist situations.
Well, we all remember the tragic situation of the destroyer USS Colon hit by a Zodiac boat filled with explosives. Now, anybody going to see that, obviously, they're going to call. But what kind of suspicious activities are you talking about?
Well, we have a list here in our brochure, and I'll just go over a few of them so people can become familiar with some of them and what they are. People appearing to be engaged in surveillance of any kind, like note-taking, shooting video photos, making sketches, or asking questions. People near critical facilities who do not fit the surrounding environment, such as individuals wearing improper attire. Recovering or tossing items into, onto the waterway or shoreline. Unattended vessels or vehicles in unusual locations. Lights flashing between boats. Unusual diving activity, especially night operations. Operating in or passing through an area that does not typically have such activity. Missing fencing or lighting near sensitive locations. Anchoring in an area where it's typically used not for anchoring. People showing uncommon interest in security measures, entry points, or access controls. Individuals establishing businesses or roadside food stands near sensitive locations. Small planes flying over critical areas. People attempting to buy or rent fishing or recreational vessels with cash for short-term undefined use.
I have to ask, unusual or improper clothing?
Right. In an area where there would be somebody dressed in, say, a really black diving suit or something like that.
A ninja outfit or something like
right.
that.
You would be suspicious of somebody, especially in an area if you are a boater that's familiar with your area and you see someone that's dressed in that type of attire, then you would probably say there's something not quite right with this.
Okay, it's not somebody walking down to the beach in Brogans, in other words.
Not at all.
Let's get some more callers on the air. 800-989-8255. Jerry is on the line with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi. I was wondering if anyone on the panel had a case where a terrorist plot had been thwarted as the result of a citizen tip.
Any awareness of that?
Yes. Down in our, Port of Miami, which is a very busy area, obviously, for both industrial, maritime, shipping, and immigration, too. There was a person that was taking pictures under a bridge, and that is one of the areas of suspicious activity that somebody may notice. And the captain of one of the for-hire vessels noticed that he was taking a few too many pictures for a period of time. So he called the local authorities, and the local authorities were alerted to him, and I suppose they just kind of took kept a watch on him. Well, he finally was arrested, and as a matter of fact, he was involved in some activity up in New York once, I guess, they got and questioned him as to what he was doing there in Miami. Well, come to find out, he was involved in some unusual activities up in New York, and he was finally arrested and, I think, brought to trial. So that was an unusual case where a citizen who was a captain on a vessel reported the suspicious activity, and the local law enforcement agents took it to be very seriously and question the man for the activity.
Was he charged with?
He was eventually charged with something. I can't remember exactly what it was charged with, but he was eventually charged for something that happened up in New York.
Up in New York. It did not involve whatever it was he was interested
in
the bridge. Jerry?
It seems to me that this doesn't pass the cost-benefit analysis because we can spend all of this time and energy tracking down these suspicious leads when they don't go anywhere, instead of putting our time and energy and money into a more effective way of tracking terrorism?
Well,
and that's basically how I look at it, because if we spend all this time monitoring each other for on these false accusations, it diverts attention away from the real threat.
Well, I think the idea is not to monitor each other as a normal course of events during the day. This is something when we teach our outreach personnel, who, by the way, include Coast Guard reservists and Coast Guard auxiliary, as well as civilians and other personnel. When they go and teach the outreach people, citizens, as far as what to look for as suspicious activities, they are just simply asking them to be on the lookout. They are not asking them to spy on anyone or make it a point to really look at someone very closely about what's, if you happen to be in the area and you happen to be out on the waterway, you're in a pleasure craft or a recreational boat and you see something that's unusual, just simply pick up the phone and report it either through your local law enforcement agency or our National Response Center.
Jerry, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
And I do have to ask, we've obviously seen, regrettably, terrorist attacks in the United States.
Correct.
We had alerts just last week. To my knowledge, nothing yet has involved a port. We've obviously heard about a lot of concerns about, containers and that sort of thing, but
right.
Nothing yet on a port.
Nothing yet on a port that I'm aware of that's been reported. And it could be because we have very good security with our local Coast Guard and local law enforcement agencies that the Coast Guard with U.S. Customs, the FBI, and the other local law enforcement agencies that we work with. And our Coast Guard personnel have been highly trained to report suspicious or be involved or ward off suspicious activity or people that may do harm.
Chief Petty Officer Penny Collins, thanks very much for being with us today.
Okay, thank you.
Chief Petty Officer Penny Collins, Program Coordinator for the Department of Defense's America's Waterway Watch, and she was kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.